Today on the Run to the Top podcast.
For the general population, you do not need to take salt tablets or electrolyte tablets on course. You fill your body up with everything it needs during taper week. You're topping up all your electrolytes. And then on the race course, if you're, quote, cramping, calcium carbonate or Tums is going to help. Cramping is not associated with dehydration or salt intake.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Sinead Hockey.
Hi everyone, this is Sinead here with you for this latest episode of Run to the Top, brought to you by Runners Connect. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you're having a great week so far. I think we have a pretty fascinating interview on tap today. But before I introduce our guest, last week we spoke with Moath Al-Kawalda, aka Mo. Mo is an elite Jordanian runner who, after receiving his bachelor's and master's at the New York Institute of Technology, went back home to Jordan with the mission to make his country a better place. Mo is a big believer in the potential of running and sport in general to enrich individual lives and ultimately transform greater conflict. Working for the nonprofit organization Generations for Peace, Mo implemented youth sport programs in 22 war-ridden countries across Africa and the Middle East, all while, you know, training as a professional runner. If you missed last week's episode, be sure to check it out to hear a little bit about how Mo is working to build peace through sport. So this week we're speaking with Dr. Stacy Sims, a senior research fellow at the University of Waikato Adams Center of High Performance, as well as one of sport's leading environmental exercise physiologists and science nutritionists. As a former professional ultramarathoner, Ironman and Xterra triathlete, and cyclist, Stacy often found herself asking questions about training and nutrition to which there didn't seem to be any answers. So she decided to take it upon herself to find those answers. Stacy specializes in thermoregulation, hydration, performance nutrition, as well as sex differences in athletes, an area of research that, thanks to her, has made significant leaps in recent years. Stacy is also the author of ROAR, a guide for women on how to sync up their diet and exercise with their unique physiology. She's the co-founder and former CEO of Osmo Nutrition, through which she helped popularize a new, more efficient approach to hydration. Since leaving Osmo, Stacy has partnered with Noon to spread clean living and revolutionize the way we hydrate. I am so excited to have Stacy on the show, and I have a feeling she's going to teach us quite a lot. So right after a quick message from our sponsor, we'll be right back with our interview. Thank you so much to Pacific Health Labs for sponsoring Run to the Top and for giving our listeners free samples of their all-natural Excel gels. Learn more on how to get your free samples at the end of this episode and check out Pacific Health Labs at runnersconnect.net/Pacific Health. I want to give a big thanks to Body Health for sponsoring Run to the Top and for giving us Perfect Amino. These 8 essential amino acids are the building blocks of protein that my body needs to train harder and recover faster. You can enter to win a pack of 6 Perfect Amino bottles for free by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. Thanks for joining us, Stacy.
Thanks for having me.
So Stacy, you've not only been the physiologist and nutritionist to Olympians, but you're also quite an accomplished athlete yourself. Can you tell us just a little bit about your background in endurance sports?
Yeah, I'm a retired one now, but, I got my start as a runner into ultra running and then rode crew university and then graduated into triathlon and Ironman and then got into professional road bike racing and then retired from that and got into a little bit of Xterra. And then the weekend before I raced Maui Worlds for the second time, I found out I was pregnant. So my kid is done world championships, and she's very excited about that fact. But then after I had my daughter, really haven't done much since from a competitive standpoint. Now it's just trying to gain a base of fitness to be able to jump into things for fun.
Cool. So what prompted your interest in nutrition science and environmental exercise physiology? Was it being an athlete yourself and having all these questions that you wanted answered yourself?
Part of it, a lot of it has to do with being an athlete and having questions that I really wanted answered and not getting them or finding them. So that was driving me to find the answers. And if I couldn't get them, go to the lab and answer them. And then from the environmental standpoint, looking at heat and altitude, that kind of came when I was racing Kona. I got to turn around at Javi and developed some hyponatremia and was like, what's going on here? And really got back and started thinking about why did this happen and what might cause it and how do you separate things out? And so it's always an inquisitive mind.
Well, that curiosity has clearly taken you pretty far in life. Stacy, you were the co-founder and the former CEO of Osmo Nutrition. You're now partnered with Noon. Can you tell us a little bit about your mission with Osmo and now Noon, and a little bit about kind of the seedy history of the sports drink industry?
Yeah, I kind of fell into starting a company not on purpose. I was content-ish in an academic career at Stanford, driving along, but and the back cursor of that, I was a cyclist and working with cyclists and working with runners. And I had worked with another sports scientist and started this whole niche in low electrolyte carbohydrate stuff. And then Osmo kind of fell into, let's bring some of the stuff that you're talking about and creating your kitchen to market. And that all stems from original research that I did in my PhD, gosh, I don't know, 15 years ago, looking at hyperhydration and the differences between men and women and the heat and oral contraceptive pill and a whole bunch of other things that really factor into hydration and how that affects your performance in the heat and altitude. And when I started looking back at the original research, you know, from 1964 with Gatorade and some of their earlier seminal papers, it was what I was pushing with the low carbohydrate, higher electrolyte, and not this typical sports drink that is more about carbohydrate availability, not about fluid availability. And so then I kind of got pushed to the foreway with all the stuff that I was doing on the backside now becoming the forefront.
So you would say the sports drink industry has been geared more towards palatability rather than actual osmolality?
Yes, because I'll keep referring to Gatorade because that was the original drink and that's what spurred the whole sports drink market. And in 1964, we know the story of there was an assistant football coach down in Florida and his players were suffering from the heat. And his flatmate at the time was a renal physiology postdoc who said, you need to add some salt and some sugar and a little bit of potassium to help your players out. And he did that. And it was a great early solution. And then as things became more of a product to market, it had an artificial sugar added to it for palatization, not for functionality. And in the 70s, the FDA took that off the market, deeming it unsafe. So the answer to that was to double the carbohydrate intake to maintain that sweetness. So then the evolution of the sports drink came from, okay, we have the sweetness and we're doing this upsurge of marathoning. We need carbohydrate. We need to find a way to keep ourselves going. So this became the messaging behind sports drink. Let's carbohydrate availability and some fluid availability. And it became more about the palatization and the sugar availability, not necessarily about the function of it. And that's kind of how the typical sports drink in the sports drink industry has evolved. And now you see it running the gamut from Honest Sport and now the new Gatorade Organic and you have the coconut water and everyone's talking about carbohydrate availability with a little bit of fluid, but no one's really pushing down on we need fluid first because you can live 3 or 4 days without hydration and you can live 7 to 90 days without food. So from a functionality and a physiological point, you really want to look at the hydration and not the carbohydrate intake.
Interesting. So going off that from a physiological standpoint, have you discovered it's better to separate fueling and hydrating altogether?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, there's so many different opinions out in the field, especially the academic world, of what it means to be hydrated, what you need to drink. Do you drink to thirst? Do you drink to on a schedule? But it all boils down to we all agree on one thing, and that's maintaining blood volume or the available fluid for thermoregulation and muscle metabolism. And when you start looking inherently at how your small intestines works, the small intestines is where 95% of your fluid absorption takes place and is very temperamental. So if you start adding extra carbohydrate or protein amino acids to a function drink, it doesn't promote fluid going out of the gut into the bloodstream. It promotes fluid coming from the blood into the gut, which is why people experience bloating and gassiness and stomach upset and GI distress when all the stuff sits in the small intestines. So knowing that from a physiological standpoint, not from a sport nutrition and a performance aspect, but knowing from physiology that this is what you want to do, it seems a little bit, I guess, counterintuitive to try to shove everything in there as one thing. It's kind of like I say, a sports drink's like a sofa bed. It's not a good bed. It's not a good sofa because you're trying to merge two things that shouldn't be merged. And the other aspect is when you think about, okay, well, how am I fueling for something that's really easy, an easy ride, an easy run? Or how am I fueling for something that is in the heat or something that's long, something that's intense? And all of our nutritional needs change across those different stressors. But from a hydration standpoint, it doesn't. And if you were to take a 180-pound man versus a 125-pound woman and both tell them to drink this 20-ounce bottle of sports drink, how is that functional? So separating it out makes sense.
Very interesting. So does that apply to post-workout drinks as well? Most post-workout drinks, you know, advertise as being these two-in-one drinks that have one part electrolytes, one part protein. Is it okay that a beverage designed to balance fluids also have protein?
So post-exercise is different from during exercise, because during exercise, one of the things that people forget is that you have this huge amount of blood flow that's diverted from the gut. So the gut is now under hypoxic and heat stress. So it doesn't function very well. So that's why what you take in during exercise, you want to work with your physiology and with your gut. Post-exercise, you do have blood flow that goes back to the gut. But the issue with the protein, carbohydrate, all that kind of stuff is what's the true function? No one's talking about what's the function of this drink. Are you trying to rehydrate? Are you trying to shut down muscle catabolism that's happened during exercise? Are you trying to replace a meal? So it's you have to look at the functionality. So these recovery drinks with all this stuff in it, it's like the basic needs after exercise, especially within the first 30 minutes, is some protein and some carbohydrate, because that goes directly to repairing the muscle and shutting down the breakdown effects. When you start adding antioxidants to a drink, that's counterintuitive to what's needed in the body, because you need some oxidation and you need your body to understand that oxidation in order to overcome that stress and get fitter. So when you start adding all these excessive things, you aren't really sure what that function is, and most often it's more harmful than good. So sticking to the basics of let's shut down the breakdown effect of exercise with some protein, let's start that muscle reparation with the amino acids that come from that protein, and we need some carbohydrate to put some carbohydrate and sugars back into the liver and the muscle.
Interesting. So how would you advise somebody fuel during, say, a long run or a marathon? What would your fuel strategy be for something like that? Are gels okay?
I am not a gel fan. I'm not a proponent of gels. I go back to what you want is real food. And again, you can, again, fuel for what you're doing. But when we think about a gel or all this engineered nutrition, you're taking concentrated carbohydrate and putting in this compromised gut. And it promotes fluid shifts from within the body into the small intestines. And I've heard the arguments, oh, no, I'm drinking water. I'm using a more of a viscous gel. It's not a really solid gel. I'm using a natural chia seed based one. But when you're looking at what is that actually doing, it's becoming too much to activate all of the co-transport mechanisms and things that work in the intestines under that stress. And the other thing that really, I mean, I see it because I sit right in the high performance center and work with high performance athletes. And I also work with the general population and this fine line between health and performance. And you have athletes who will be like, I need non-GMO, all organic, eating clean, but then they'll take a gel. And it's like, well, how does that fit in with your overall intake of food? And more research is coming out with the gut microbiome and going, you know, endurance athletes with a high intake of sugar and low complex carbohydrate and low fiber intake because they spend so many hours training are actually perturbing their gut microbiome, which causes chronic fatigue, causes poor sleep, causes GI distress. And it might not be right now in the moment in these couple of years that you just started, but 10 years down the line, there's a significant impact. And so when you're thinking about your training and training food, you also want that to represent what you're doing in your daily life.
Definitely. And I know Noon's mission is to spread clean living and clean eating. And I know that's your mission as well. So how do you feel about all natural gels? You know, some people maybe don't have ironclad stomachs. They can't really eat solid foods while on the go. Would this be a good alternative for them?
I'm going to say no. Like, yeah. I'm still looking at the concentration of the carbohydrate. And for people who can't eat, like I get that from Ironman athletes, ultra runners, marathoners. I just can't eat. I can't eat. And it's not about eating a whole bunch of food at once. It's a sip, sip, nibble, nibble approach. So it's a small amount on a more regular basis. It's not every 15 minutes take something in. It's like you're fueling for what you're doing. And someone thinks 3-4 hour marathon, I need to eat a whole bunch, but you don't. Because you go into it well tapered, well fueled. And then on the race course, you could go early by, you know, start eating some chews or little protein bites for the first half. And then the second half, you can exist on glucose tablets. So it's not about what I need to eat now in the first part of the run being the same as what I'm eating 4 hours in, because your body does change. And it comes about, okay, well, if I'm using glucose tablets to get that blood sugar lift, then that's going to allow me to maintain pace without putting anything else in my gut that might slow me down.
Absolutely. And going off glucose tablets, obviously those are a means of fueling, but I've also read you're not a huge proponent of electrolyte pills and salt tabs. Why is that?
I am not a big proponent, and I'll quantify it. There are some instances when you do need to take in a salt tablet. If you are hyponatremic, meaning that you've just been drinking water and you're starting to overdrink, because that tends to be the message with all this stuff about hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. People are like, oh, I need to drink. And they're just drinking plain water. So that can predispose you to having water intoxication, hyponatremia. It doesn't happen to everyone. And there are sex differences in that where women will finish exercise with a lower blood sodium content and men will finish exercise with a higher blood sodium content. So women are more predisposed to hyponatremia. If a woman is in the high hormone phase, again, she's more predisposed to hyponatremia because progesterone kicks out total body sodium. If you are a man or a woman with a clinical incidence of what we call syndrome of inappropriate aldosterone secretion, then you definitely are predisposed to hyponatremia. But for the general population, you do not need to take salt tablets or electrolyte tablets on course. You fill your body up with everything it needs during taper week by the nature of your volume going down and you're eating real foods, you're salting your food, you're eating pumpkin seeds and topping up all your electrolytes. And then on the race course, if you feel like you need something because you're, quote, cramping, then something like calcium carbonate or Tums is going to help. It's cramping. It's not associated with dehydration or salt intake. And the idea of having a salty sweater or I have a high sweat rate, none of that correlates with what your body needs. And I hear people go, oh, well, I'm a really salty sweater. Well, probably because you have a high salt diet. Or your early season and you just hit your first hot race. And so your body's trying to conserve fluid and releasing more sodium, but your body has plenty of sodium stores. You don't need to replace it during that particular race. After exercise, after your race, yeah, you're salting your watery fruits and veggies and replacing. But on course, it's a no-go. It also causes GI distress. The same as I was saying, you know, a concentrated carbohydrate going into your dehydrated gut will pull water in. Same with a tablet of sodium. It's going to pull water in. If you're hyponatremic, that's a good thing. But in general, people are like, oh, I'm cramping. I need a salt tab. They take it and it exacerbates the condition.
So I feel like there's a lot of misinformation around cramping. I always thought that it was a product of partly dehydration and partly potassium deficiency. So what you're saying is it has nothing to do with that?
No, not at all.
Interesting.
Because there's a whole realm of cramp research out there and everybody's trying to figure it out. But there's so many different things that cause a muscle cramp. Some of it's dehydration, sure, because you have now reduced blood flow to some of the smaller muscles, which could cause a spasm. That could be a cause of cramping. The other one is a calcium magnesium imbalance because you start a muscle contraction, you need both. If you have too much of one and not enough of the other, it'll cause a spasm and an incomplete contraction, which is why I say Tums on course because we'll sweat out calcium and we'll hold on tightly to magnesium. And the other is weaker muscles or poor running shoes or poor mechanics, and all of that takes time. So when people say, oh, I'm cramping, I need salt tablets, I'm like, no, you need to investigate more. Why are you cramping? What's it feel like? When's it come on? And usually you can figure out what particular point it might be.
That's fascinating. I feel like our listeners are probably going to go invest in some Tums after listening to this if they haven't already. So you just said that some people are saltier sweaters due to the fact that they just have more salt in their diets, but there are also heavy sweaters and light sweaters. How would you recommend a runner go about determining when and how to hydrate, as well as take in electrolytes for their individual needs, depending on how they sweat?
So I'll say you can use water for something that's up to an hour. But if something's intense, you need something more than water, because water doesn't hydrate. You need a little bit of salt and a little bit of sugar to actually pull that fluid in. But when you're trying to figure out, well, I have a high sweat rate, or I have a low sweat rate, or I'm a woman, I vasodilate and I turn beet red and I don't sweat a lot, it is very individual. There are no specific guidelines. I'm not going to say drink between X amount of ounces per hour, because I don't know everyone out there. And you can definitely start with the whole drink to thirst, sip, sip thing for the first about 2 hours. Unless you're a woman in the high hormone phase of your menstrual cycle or postmenopausal, because then your thirst sensation is completely off. After 2 hours, there are so many biochemical changes that your thirst is not a very good representation of what's happening. So then this is where you're drinking on a schedule. Your alarm goes beep, beep, and you have a sip. But what you're drinking has to be functional. You need some sugar in there. Two sugars are better than one for fluid absorption. You need some sodium. You need some potassium. If you're drinking plain water, you're not going to be functional in pulling that fluid in. When it's early season, just now, you know, spring starting, some days are really hot and some days are cold, you're going to find that your fluid needs are going to be a lot higher now on the hot days than in July, because your body will adapt. So I wish there was an easy answer, but it becomes more objective and self-facilitating learning. And if you're really into figuring it out, you can buy pee sticks on Amazon and look at your urine-specific gravity and figure out if you're hydrated or not. So you pee on a stick before you go out, you do your usual intervention, you come back, see how dehydrated you are, and you can tailor it from there.
That's great. We'll definitely link those pee sticks below if people are interested in trying those out. So back to women's hydration needs, how do women's hydration requirements vary through the stages of their menstrual cycles?
Yeah, so just for a brief review, we say that day one of the menstrual cycle is the first day of bleeding. And around day 14 is ovulation. And then you have the high hormone phase, which is when estrogen and progesterone rise. And typically the 5 to 7 days before your period starts is when women are most compromised from a physiological aspect. And what I mean by compromise is they've lost 8% of the water out of their blood, so their plasma volume has dropped. Progesterone is elevated and it kicks out total body sodium. Their core temperature is elevated by around 0.5 degrees C, so they have a higher resting core temperature, which means they have less heat tolerance. Their sweat rate is higher, but they tend to sweat later. So all of these things are really indicative of changing your nutrition hydration strategy. So we think about it as the first 3 weeks with day one up to about day 21. You're okay doing the same thing, but that 5 to 7 days before your period starts, you definitely can't rely on your thirst, because your thirst sensation is not as sensitive. And you need to drink something that is physiologically functional, so it has some salt and sugar in it. And knowing that your core temperature is elevated, drinking something that's cold before you go out, or minty, like Metromint water, cold Metromint water. And that should be a shout out for Metromint. They don't pay me. But anything to kind of alleviate those changes that the estrogen and progesterone create.
That's fascinating. I did not know that. So if a woman has her period leading into a race, how would you suggest she alter her hydration strategy, especially if she's not as sensitive to thirst? Should she be trying to hydrate even more than she would have to otherwise?
Yep. So in the days leading up during taper week, you're salting your watery fruits and veggies, so you're pulling in more fluid. You can use hyperhydration strategies. You can do anything from miso and chicken soup, or you can buy some of the special products on the market. Just anything to increase your plasma volume and sodium content. So then on race day, you can use your same race strategy, just being cognizant that you do need an alarm to tell you to go, okay, I need to sip, 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 and not pay attention to thirst.
Okay, so while you were working with Osmo Nutrition, your slogan for the women's line was, "Women are not small men." What did you mean by that, and how do women's and men's protein and carb requirements differ in addition to their hydration requirements?
I start almost all my sex difference lectures with women are not small men, because it paints a picture of like, what? But you go into a grocery store or clothing shop and everything's divided up. You have deodorant for women, you have deodorant for men. You have hair products for men, clothes for men, clothes for women, all that kind of stuff. But no one really talks about the internal touch points. And almost all the sport nutrition information that's out there has been done on research of 18 to 22-year-old college age, primarily white men. And that doesn't apply to everyone. And it was just thought, well, we have this little pilot or we have these studies, we'll just generalize to women and it's good enough. But there are sex differences from birth. You have XX versus XY, and we're knowing more and more about things from muscle transcription to how estrogen can overexpress or underexpress certain genes. And there's just a whole area of research that has been tapped into from a sport nutrition standpoint. So getting people to understand that what you read in a general scope does not necessarily apply to women, because the research hasn't been done on women. And when you look at how the menstrual cycle and sex hormones really perturb a woman's physiology throughout those 28 days, it's very apparent that the general recommendations out there are not appropriate, especially those 2 weeks leading up to a woman's period when estrogen and progesterone start to rise. And for example, from a carbohydrate and protein perspective, estrogen spares carbohydrates. So when you have areas of or times of estrogen surges, you can't hit intensities because you rely more on free fatty acids and you're not able to access as much stored carbohydrate. So that in itself will impede performance. Progesterone is very catabolic. It increases lean mass loss and it also kicks out total body sodium. So you need to be cognizant to bring in more protein and sodium in times of elevated progesterone. Then when you add in the oral contraceptive pill, that's a whole nother layer of complication. The fact that exogenous hormones can affect your metabolism, it also affects your ability to hit intensities. A woman who's on an oral contraceptive pill is taking 11% of her performance off the table because it compromises so much. And people don't talk about it. And when you generalize so much of the research to women that come from men, you're missing the mark and impeding women's performance as well as progression in endurance and other sports.
Interesting. And there's not a lot of information out there on this topic. There's not a lot on contraception for female athletes. So you sound like you're not a huge supporter of the pill for women that are trying to make a go of it in the sport. Is that right?
Yes. And again, this is the fine line between health and performance. I have several athletes who see their GP and their GP is like, you are at risk for low bone density, or, you know, your periods are irregular, we need to put you on an oral contraceptive pill, or women who are not wanting to get pregnant. So there are many reasons to go on an OCP. But from a performance perspective, I look and I see the research that comes out on that. LeBrun does a lot on that, and Constance LeBrun does a lot, and Nina Steichenfeld does a lot. And when you look at how it downregulates the ability for muscles to recover, it reduces your ability for high intensity, your VO2 peak is downregulated, your core temperature is off, all your thermoregulatory thresholds are changed. And from a high performance athlete looking at that data, you wouldn't take something that would do that to you. You'd look at it and be like, no way. The physician side of things are like, no, you need this for your health. But from an athletic performance side of things, you're like, no, I don't want that. So it becomes that fine line. How do you manipulate around that? And women will use it to manipulate their cycle, but there are natural ways to manipulate your cycle.
Very interesting. So what would you suggest to female athletes as a safe alternative to the pill?
I would say initially use an IUD. Preferably copper one and not a hormonally based one. Although if you are using a hormone based one, it's just a localized dose of progesterone. So it's not systemic. So you don't have the performance decrements. If you can't use an IUD because you're like, no, it just doesn't work for me, it's uncomfortable, then you can try a progestin only mini pill. And it has less of the detrimental effects of a triphasic or combined oral contraceptive pill. You still will have a little bit of performance decrement, but not as much as if you go on a standard oral contraceptive pill. And if you are willing to do the whole natural thing, there are ways to not affect your performance and be able to manipulate things and also protect you from pregnancy. So there are different things that you can do. It just depends on where you want to go or what you want to do from a birth control standpoint.
Very interesting. So something else I wanted to ask you about that has to do again with the differences between the nutritional requirements of men and women is what your take is on the popular high-fat, low-carb diet. Does this diet pose different disadvantages and advantages between men and women?
Yeah, the low-carbohydrate, high-fat diet, when you look at the research that's coming out, again, it's been done on men, and there really is no performance gain. When push comes to shove, you look at the performance, there it's just not there. The data doesn't support a performance gain by following low-carbohydrate, high-fat diet. Yes, it does allow you to burn more fat and become more metabolically efficient. But the flip side of that is in a race situation, when and if you need carbohydrate and you try to take it, your body actually can't use it that well because you've lost some ability from an enzymatic point of view to actually utilize that carbohydrate. So it could possibly be a detriment to performance. When we think about the sex differences between a low carbohydrate, high fat diet, it's very disadvantageous for a woman to use that. We need a certain amount of carbohydrate in order for us to function from a daily life and an endocrine and protect our health. When we are under areas of high stress or low carbohydrate intake is perceived as a stress, we have a lot of cortisol. And cortisol, quote, steals estrogen, progesterone to keep the production going. So you'll end up with menstrual cycle dysfunction. I have many athletes that come in and go, I'm trying this low carbohydrate, high fat diet. I'm getting tired. I'm getting slow. I'm gaining weight. I don't understand. I'm eating less. You know, I'm trying to do this. But then my husband or my boyfriend is leaning up and getting super fast and fit. I don't understand what's going on. And it comes back down to an evolutionary standpoint where in a famine situation, the male of the species was the one that went to go get the calories. So under areas of low carbohydrate, because they're just finding meat to eat, so high protein, high fat, a man will lean up and increase testosterone, get fitter and faster. But it was not advantageous for the woman of the species to be able to reproduce or need a high amount of calories because it was extra calories would go to feed the offspring so the offspring could grow, and it wasn't advantageous for the woman to need a lot. So from a physiological standpoint, that is represented in these low carbohydrate, high fat diets where a woman will get slower and tired and fat and get menstrual cycle dysfunction and the guy will lean up. And no one talks about that either because the research out there, again, has been primarily done on men, and the small subset of women that are experiencing this are thinking, well, I'm not training hard enough. I'm not doing the diet right. I'd have poor sleep, but it's a functionality of not having enough carbohydrate.
Got it. So in a nutshell, what you're saying is women truly do need carbs, especially as endurance athletes.
Yeah, not the typical, you know, 1980s to 90s, 60% of your diet from carbohydrate. And you can cycle it too. You can have days where it's low carbohydrate, but really it's fueling in and around your training and not doing a diet fad, especially if you're a woman. You need to take care of your endocrine system because if your endocrine system is disrupted and you have menstrual cycle dysfunction, then that can also lead to thyroid dysfunction and a whole swath of other health issues.
Interesting. So in short, you advise we get our carbs in, but not really as much during exercise. So Stacey, what is your take on sugar? Lots of sports drinks have a little bit or, you know, a lot of sugar in them. Does sugar actually inhibit one's ability to use fat as fuel?
No, and this is a bit of a misnomer that's come out too. The body isn't linear in the way that it uses fuel. One of the age-old sayings in exercise physiology is you need carbohydrate to burn the fat fuel. And you need a little bit of carbohydrate in order to get into fat burning or, you know, your beta oxidation and get that going. The tipping point is when you're taking in just quick hits of sugar all the time, then your body becomes very reliant on that quick hit of sugar. So if you're using mixed macronutrient food, you will be able to save your gut for the most part because carbohydrate, fat, and protein all help each other to get out of the stomach at a slow rate and can be absorbed well. And your metabolism from an exercise standpoint will be better off as well. So it's not just straight sugar. It's not just straight carbohydrate. You're using a little bit of all of them to get your metabolism up to speed so that you're using carbohydrate and fat during exercise.
Cool. So we're often asked, which sugars are best? There's fructose, there's glucose, there's maltodextrin. There are so many different types of sugars, and people are often wondering which ones serve their needs best in exercise. Does it really matter, or is there one you would suggest people try to stick to?
Maple syrup? Can I say that? I say maple syrup because really it's just tree sap that the water's been boiled off, and it has glucose and sucrose in it. I don't recommend fructose because there is a sex difference in absorption, and it is one of the primary reasons why people get GI distress. So women can absorb around 26 grams per 100, men can absorb 66, and it just hangs out in the intestines and increases that pressure, which draws water in, becomes an effective diuretic. Maltodextrin is very similar. They use maltodextrin to get a low osmolality, so it exits the stomach quickly, but then it gets to the small intestines and increases the pressure. The thing about glucose and sucrose, those are the two primary sugars that your body can recognize. The fact that we have glucose, sodium, co-transport mechanism, so you can push fluid across. And sucrose, yes, it does break down to glucose and fructose, but there's a rate limiting step, so your gut is never overloaded by the amount of fructose. So if you're looking for fluid availability and efficient absorption, you want glucose-sucrose mix. So this is why I'm like, well, maple syrup's awesome because not only do you get the glucose-sucrose, but you also get some trace minerals that are very helpful in the general diet.
So I've never actually heard of maple syrup as fuel during exercise, but I have heard of people trying honey. What's your take on honey?
Honey is super high in fructose. Yeah. Yeah. From a sweetening perspective, like things you're choosing during the day to use as a sweetening agent, raw honey and maple syrup are the go-tos. But during exercise, it's the maple syrup aspect.
That's good to know. So in general, you advise people try to fuel with solid foods during long runs and marathons. What would you suggest for this? Did you have a favorite go-to when you were competing in ultra marathons and triathlons?
So when I was doing ultras, it was way back in the day when you're like, oh, I'm going to have some pretzels. I'm going to have some peanuts. And then you started having all the gels and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, go back to pretzels, maybe not peanuts because that's considered a bit heavy. Running on Real Food is this great vegan running blog. And she has all these little protein bites from dates and cashews and figs and that kind of stuff. You can buy Bliss Balls, the Larabar bites. There's lots of little protein bites that you can buy as well. But then don't be afraid to have like white bread with like chocolate nutso on it, where you're having like a chocolate spread on white bread. So you're getting some fat and some carbohydrate and some protein. And it's the only time I would say eat white bread because, you know, it's higher on the glycemic index. Sweet potatoes and normal potatoes with salt on them. And those are really good as well. Easy to digest. And the hotter it is, the less fat you want. So you want to look around and be like, well, on a cold day, salted sweet potatoes and peanuts are awesome. But on a hot day, maybe not. Maybe I'll just go with some white bread and some salted jam or something.
So can you share with us why that is? Why would temperature impact how someone processes different foods?
Depends on the hotter it is, the more blood flow you have diverted from the gut. So it all comes down to taking care of the gut.
Got it. So we've talked about what to consume mid-run. What would you suggest people consume post-run, especially post-workout or long run, to facilitate glycogen repletion, fluid balance, and overall recovery?
So one of the best recovery foods out there is non-fat Greek yogurt. I say non-fat after exercise because you want to get out of your stomach quickly. But it's like the complete package of two different proteins, sodium, potassium, magnesium. And so it's quick and it's easy. And the protein hit works for men and women. From a fluid recovery standpoint, protein also helps with recovery, like total body fluid, because it crosses so many different compartments in the body. And if you're thinking about not having an appetite right after exercise, you could do a protein recovery drink, but you are making it yourself. So if you're a vegan, then you're using a quinoa and pea and hemp protein powder with some almond milk. If you're not vegan, then you can go with a grass-fed ultrafiltrate whey protein isolate with some almond milk And it's really easy on the stomach. And both of those are going to kickstart that recovery and also help rehydrate. And then after you do that, you're looking at real food, like your next meal, and having watery fruits and veggies and some good protein after that. The critical standpoint is within that first 30 minutes post-exercise, getting a good hit of protein in, because then that opens up your window for glycogen recovery that will allow you to have your real meal as your recovery food.
Interesting. So it sounds like your partnership with Noon couldn't be more perfect. Your missions to get back to the basics and live and eat clean align perfectly. So how has your partnership been with Noon so far? And what exactly do you have in the works with the company right now?
Yeah. So after I left Osmo, I got a phone call from Kevin Rutherford, who's the CEO. And he's like, "Hey, Stace, you know, saw the company's going down. What's going on?" And I was like, "Well, I left. I wasn't that excited. I really wanted to do some things and just wasn't working out." And he's like, "Well, you know, you're too smart to leave the industry from a product development point of view." And I was like, "Okay. I've always been interested in Noon. I love the mission. I love the fact that you've cleaned up all your products, because if we had been talking 2.5 years ago, I probably wouldn't be talking to you because you have all this stuff in an electrolyte tablet that shouldn't be there." And Kevin's like, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I was like, "Well, if we bring a product to market, I want it to be the best of the best. I know a lot about the food industry where if something is less than 1% of the weight of the product, it doesn't have to be on the label. And I'm not fine with that. I don't want silica in my sports drink. I don't want fillers and flow agents. I don't want what we call a WTF flavor, which is a natural flavor or organic compliant, because all of these things are not functional and long-term they can hurt our gut from a bacteria standpoint." And he's like, "Sweet. Okay. So can we do better than what you've already done with the scratch and the Osmos?" And I was like, "Yeah, we can, because of all this new research that's come out in the past 4 years on the gut itself. We understand so much more about absorption and functionality." So about 1.5 years ago, this conversation started and we started working on this new product that just came out. And I'm super psyched because not only is it a product that I've always wanted to put out on the market where what you see on the label is what's there. There's no fillers, there's no flow agents. It's the only product out there in the sports world that comes from a natural food lens as well. So it's non-GMO project certified. It's also clean sport, so informed choice. So it works on both angles. And some of the technology from the natural food spaces come in from the fruit powders, where other drinks and things that have freeze-dried or organic freeze-dried fruit powder, it's plated to a fructose or maltodextrin or silica or something else. But this new technology from the natural food space is really just the evaporated fruit juice. So it's nothing else is in there. And their mission, their whole mission of getting people to move more and be clean and just enjoy life and enjoy being fit, and the Clean Sport Initiative and everything that they're doing as a company really resonates with me. And it's everything I wanted to do. So when we started this conversation, it just seemed like a really good fit. And it is. I love it. It's fun.
Absolutely. When you're passionate about your work, you're definitely in the right profession. So, Stacey, I know Noon has a new product coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is? Are you at liberty to tell us? I know Noon just put out or just...
Yeah, so it is officially out there. So it's in all the sports specialties. It's on noonlife.com. It's in REI, hopefully in Whole Foods towards the end of the year. But it is a powder drink. It's not an electrolyte tablet. So it is in that low carbohydrate, high electrolyte space to fill that niche for runners who are looking for something more than just that hour workout with the tablets. And it isn't for every session that you have. It's for that high intensity CrossFit, Orange Theory, VO2 max, hour intensity, or your long runs. And it comes in little single serves. It comes in a pouch of powder. It's great.
That's really exciting. Something I love about Noon is that their products aren't purely athlete oriented. They're for anybody and everybody. But it is definitely cool that they are coming out with a more endurance athlete specific product. So our listeners will have to keep an eye out on the new Noon product for sure.
Yeah. And the other thing I like is they're like looking across all the need states of the day. Like if I'm going to be in the office all day and I'm not working out, but I still need to hydrate, well, there's something there. Or I'm going to go for a big long ride or a run on the weekend. Well, there's something there. So they're covering all the need states, which I think is really cool.
As do I. I love Noon in that it's really a product for anyone and anytime. So that's very cool. So we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors, and then we will be right back with Stacy for our final kick round. While we runners usually practice good, nutrient-dense diets, most of us lack the amino acids needed to break down and process the proteins we consume. This is bad news for both recovery and muscle growth, not to mention a ton of other vital life processes. That's why Body Health created Perfect Amino, the perfect blend of the 8 essential amino acids to help you build your muscles, expedite recovery, and nab that next personal record. I take Perfect Amino tablets every day and mix the Perfect Amino XP powder in my post-workout smoothies for extended protein absorption. This has helped me work harder and reach new levels in my running, something so important to the Body Health team that if you place in your age group at any public racing event, they'll put you in their winner's circle and send you a free bottle of Perfect Amino. Check it out at runnersconnect.net/winner-circle to learn more. And don't forget to use coupon code RUNNERSCONNECT on your next purchase. That's RUNNERSCONNECT in all caps. Make sure to also visit runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth, where you can enter to win a 6-pack of Perfect Amino worth $230. Again, that's runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. I wish you the best of luck. When I started using gels to fuel during my long runs and workouts, I'll be honest, I couldn't find one that I didn't hate having to take. All the gels I tried were either too sweet or too thick, making them hard to consume without chasing them down with gulps and gulps of water. They also seemed to be giving me all sorts of GI issues, which obviously made long runs and workouts a lot harder than they needed to be, but even more importantly, I felt like they were impacting my overall health. That is until I discovered Excel Gel by Pacific Health Labs. Unlike most gels, Excel Gel has a thin consistency that makes it easy to take while running, and it's also all natural, completely free of gluten and preservatives you just don't need. It's also the only gel on the market that has the proven 4-to-1 ratio of carbs to protein, as well as a mix of carbohydrates to smooth glucose uptake and extend endurance. Excel Gel helps me get the most out of my long runs and workouts, and I absolutely love it, especially the raspberry cream flavor with caffeine. Right now, Pacific Health is offering all Run to the Top listeners free samples of Excel Gel. All you have to do is send an email to info@pacifichealthlabs.com with the subject line Run to the Top. Then simply request your Excel Gel samples, as well as the address you'd like them mailed to, and then you can try them for yourself for free. Again, that's info@pacifichealthlabs.com. If you want to check out more of Pacific Health's great products, you can do so at runnersconnect.net/Pacific Health. We are back with Stacy Sims for our final kick round. Stacy, these are just 5 quick, simple questions to end the show, so we'll just go ahead and jump right into it. Stacy, what has been the best piece of advice you've ever received?
It wasn't really advice. It was just the attitude that my parents had, that don't ever take no as the right answer, that always keep searching. So push the dogma and challenge the authority. And I think that's what's driven me in my career, both as an academic and as an athlete.
Absolutely. Inquisitiveness and persistence are 2 really good qualities to have. They've obviously served you well. So, Stacy, our next question is, what is your favorite running book or blog?
Oh, so I'm biased in where I'm going to say my favorite running book is my own book that just came out. But if I'm not biased, then there isn't any one particular one blog or book. I like a lot of what Celine Yeager does. I like Running on Real Food as a blog. I follow a lot of Kara Gelscher's stuff. So it's a combination, just to get a wide lens of what's going on in the world.
After reading up on you and reading the book's description, I was kind of like, wow, I could probably really benefit from this. So I went ahead and bought it.
Awesome, thanks.
We'll link that below. I'm sure many of our listeners will be interested in that. So our next question, what would you tell a brand new runner?
To have fun. It's all about the movement. And even though it hurts right at the start, just keep going, because it does become easier and it becomes free. Like, people think about running, if you think of running as a slog, then it's not. something you should be doing. You should think about it as freedom. Freedom for your mind is like meditation. You get to see things. It's when you're traveling, it's a great way to get places and see things. And it's just, it's freedom. So just keep going and move.
That's great. Like you said, if people can just stick with it through that initial period where every run kind of feels like agony, it's definitely very freeing. So that's a great piece of advice. Also just to enjoy the process, like you said. So great piece of advice there. So our next question, Stacey, is what was your favorite go-to pre-race meal back when you were competing in triathlons and ultra marathons?
A double shot of espresso with some protein powder and a tablespoon of almond butter or peanut butter.
Nice. It sounds like a very well-rounded pre-race meal there. So our last question is, what is your favorite running product? Obviously, besides Noon.
Favorite running product. Oof. I'm going to have to say all the mobility wad, like the bands and the mobility wad ball, all the things that keep me mobile from and injury free, I guess is the best way to put it. And Kelly Starrett's book, Supple Leopard, that allows you how to do everything. Because I'm not young. My hips are tight. So if I don't mobilize, then I can't run.
That's great. We'll definitely link that below. I feel like most runners can probably afford to do a little bit more on the recovery side. So we'll definitely link that. Stacey, thank you so much for joining us today. I have learned so much in this interview, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. So I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us today. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Gotta say, I am really excited to read Stacey's book, which is titled Roar, R-O-A-R, How to Match Your Food and Fitness to Your Unique Female Physiology for Optimum Performance, Great Health, and a Strong, Lean Body for Life. Whether you're a female runner or maybe you know one, Stacey's book serves as a comprehensive, physiology-based nutrition and training guide with all the information a woman needs to optimize her body composition, performance, and overall health. It's linked below if you're interested. And be sure to keep an eye out for Noon's new product designed specifically for endurance athletes. Just as Stacey said, her mission with Noon is to support clean living and a clean planet. Noon's products, including the one they're currently launching, are plant-based and non-GMO, with all the ingredients needed to replenish your electrolytes and keep you hydrated. If you haven't tried Noon out yet, be sure to check it out through the link below. I wish Stacey the best of luck with all her endeavors with Noon, and if you want to follow her progress, you can check out her Twitter account through the link below as well. So next week, we're speaking with Dr. Irene Davis, who is a professor in the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at Harvard Medical School, as well as the director of the Spalding National Running Center. Furthermore, Irene is one of the world's leading experts on running biomechanics and injury, not to mention the most credible minimalist shoe and barefoot running advocate in the world. Needless to say, this is a pretty controversial topic in the running world, and I can't wait to have Irene on the show to hear her side of the argument. It should make for a pretty fascinating interview, so be sure to check that out next week. So before I go, I just want to make one quick announcement. This upcoming May 5th through the 7th, Runners Connect is holding a free, one-of-a-kind online running nutrition summit. We're bringing together 15 nutrition experts who will teach you the research strategies and proven systems to help you find the nutrition plan that fits your lifestyle. Our speakers will also tell you how to adjust for your training needs and race distances and execute to achieve your nutrition goals. In other words, they'll pretty much cover just about everything an endurance athlete could possibly want to know about nutrition. If you're interested, make sure you head on over to runnersconnect.net/summit and claim your free ticket now. Thank you so much again for listening in, and I hope you have a really great week until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.